Hello, listeners. I'm Sam, and I'm here with Dr. Laura. And today we are going to be covering a topic that was ironically suggested to me while using the washroom at the gym. So today we are going to be talking about probiotics. No, this is not an Activia commercial, but I need to know how many millions, trillions, or gazillions probiotics I need to be really taking to make me healthy. So let's talk about probiotics. So, Laura, I feel like I never heard about probiotics like I did until they started the Activia commercials. And they came out with that poo challenge, the regular challenge, where you had to eat the yogurt every day and then it made you regular. So, what are probiotics and why do we need them?
Yeah, so a lot of probiotics have gotten a lot of hype, especially in the last couple of years, because you mentioned there's a lot of Activia challenges, and everywhere we look, there's probiotics kind of fortified in foods, and everybody's kind of wondering what that means and really if it's good for them or if it's a marketing ploy, which a lot of times it ends up being a marketing ploy unless you kind of dig a little deeper. So to understand probiotics starting off, we really need to talk about something called the human microbiome. So basically to make it simple, the human microbiome is our good and bad bacteria. And a lot of people don't realize that our good and bad bacteria is located literally everywhere in our body. So it goes all the way from our mouth, all through our gastrointestinal tract, all the way to our urethra, so where we pee, all the way out to our skin. We have a vaginal flora. We have flora literally everywhere in our body, our respiratory tract, etc. And so we actually have over 500 bacterial species, and the amount of microbes we have is 100,000 billion. So that's the amount of microbes that are in our body at one time. So this microbiome helps to do a variety of things. You can imagine, because there's so many, they help to facilitate digestion, nutrient absorption, and they help to shape and actually form our immune system. So through that, it protects against infection, can maintain the normal function of the intestines, and that's kind of what people know probiotics to do, is to help with your gut, right? To help regulate your bowels. And so it does help to maintain normal function of the intestines, but probiotics do a lot more. They actually help to stimulate the maturation of your immune system when you're born. They regulate your immune system throughout life, and there's a ton of other benefits. And so when we're looking at, in my opinion, we're really just at the tip of the iceberg when it comes to research on probiotics, because there are specific strains, and we'll kind of get into that, but it's becoming so much more than just digestion. And so looking at how we achieve our flora is really important, so that we know. And so I'm going to keep calling it our flora, but this is basically how we achieve that balance. I'm talking about good and bad bacteria. So what happens is, basically, we achieve our flora from birth to 2 years old. That's when we're really creating what's going to be our microbiome. And so the newborn gut is actually seen as sterile at birth. And so you actually end up getting your bacteria from mom. And so it's interesting, because the type of bacteria that you actually get. So I mentioned there's different types of bacteria in different areas of your body. So what actually happens is, you have a specific strains of bacteria that are in your gut, specific strains that are on your skin, and they all kind of serve different functions. So if we have strains that are supposed to be on our skin somewhere else, that can actually be bad, right? Because those aren't supposed to be there. So what happens is, the way you are born actually changes the type of bacteria you have. So they found that when infants were born via vaginal birth, they actually had more of that microbiome from the mom's vaginal canal, which can translate into the gut bacteria that infants need. Versus
Interesting. I've heard of that
when,
actually. That's
yeah,
weird.
and it's interesting, because when babies were born via C-section, meaning they came right out of the skin, they actually had more of the flora that mom has on her skin. And that flora is actually not great for the gut bacteria we need. The vaginal flora is made to do that, right? Whereas our skin bacteria is not made to do that. So it actually, looking at the research, they actually found that infants born via C-section were more likely to have more infections, be obese later in life, and have asthma and that sort of thing. So why that's important is, the C-section birth rate in Canada is about 27%. And sometimes we can't avoid it. Sometimes it's how our baby needs to be birthed, and that's completely fine. But this highlights the importance of supplementing with probiotics and knowing when to take them and when to continue them in your infant, regardless of how they're born.
Oh.
So I found that really, really interesting.
But you wouldn't give a baby a probiotic. You would?
Yep, you would.
Oh wow. I didn't know that. How do you give a baby a probiotic? Is it in milk?
So there's specific strains that you would use. And so what I would often recommend is when a mom is pregnant, breastfeeding, all of those stages, you need to be on a probiotic. And the research has actually shown that when a mom takes a probiotic in pregnancy, that can actually reduce the incidence of asthma, like the atopic triad, right? That asthma, allergies, and
Oh.
atopic dermatitis. So that's taking a probiotic in utero. And then once the baby's born, if you're breastfeeding, you can actually supplement with a specific probiotic meant for breastfeeding infants, and usually it just goes in a powder. So you would just like put that in a powder and mix it. Sometimes they come in for really small infants, they come in drops, so you can just drop it.
Interesting. Wow, I had no idea.
And so if we get our complete flora, what we're going to have for the rest of our life by two, it's kind of like, well, why do we need to do anything then if it's fully developed? And so things that change our flora, obviously we all know antibiotics to be a big thing of depleting all our good bacteria, but also things like infection, poor diet, stress, general aging, lack of good quality sleep, infections, which I already said, and inflammation just in general. So a lot of things we do in our lifetime can actually change the bacteria balance we have in our body. Not to mention with our diet, not even just a poor diet, but a not varied diet, a diet that consists of maybe lots of fruits and vegetables, but a lot of the same fruits and vegetables. Your body's going to make the bacteria of those fruits and vegetables, and that's it. So you might still not have a very diverse microbiome.
So an antibiotic kills all of the bacteria, right? Like that's the principle of it.
It kills everything. And yeah, they're necessary. There's times when we absolutely need them, but it's a matter of, I guess, making up for what we're ruining or what we're kind of depleting as a result. And so, yeah, that's kind of the basics of probiotics. Basically, I mean, different, like I mentioned, and we'll get into it, but different species do different things. There's different research coming out based on that, but that's kind of how the basics of what it is and how it changes. And so yeah, that's kind of what probiotics are.
Okay, cool. So you were mentioning food. As we know, Activia obviously has probiotics. But also a new trend is kombucha. Kombucha. I've noticed that's always like a hot topic when it comes to probiotics. And what other foods can I eat to get my probiotics in?
And so I find with yogurt, it's a really, really big marketing thing. I've seen juices with probiotics added. And the thing you really have to ask yourself is, first of all, what type of probiotics are in there? And second of all, are they what type, and are they even alive when you're eating them? By the time you get them, are they even functioning probiotics? And so with Activia in particular, and lots of yogurts, they use certain strains that are transitory. So what that means is they go right through your gut. So while you're taking the yogurt every single day, you might feel better because you have those kind of that bacteria going through. But as soon as you stop, then you don't feel better anymore. And then not to mention, a lot of the bacteria that's in there is often not alive by the time you're consuming it. It's not standardized like a supplement would be. But then on the other side of it, a lot of people and a lot of my patients are actually dairy sensitive. So if you're dairy sensitive and you're taking Activia for the probiotics, it's not going to be beneficial and actually might make things worse.
And you mentioned alive, like, so we're looking for probiotics that are alive.
And so probiotics are a bacteria, right? So they're a living entity. And so what you're actually looking for when it comes to probiotics from a food source is, I would say, we're looking at fermented foods. And so instead of looking at those products that are artificially fortified with probiotics, because they're much less likely to stay alive because the probiotics aren't in their natural environment, right? Whereas if you get a food that's actually fermented, fermented foods naturally create that good bacteria. And we used to ferment food to kind of store it, and that bacteria helped to, I guess, preserve it a little bit longer. But what we found is that with that, those quote unquote preservatives, because they're not preservatives, it's good bacteria, that was actually better for our gut health. And so things like kefir, so I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
No.
So I pronounce it kefir. I don't know if some people might pronounce it kefir, but it's K-E-I, sorry, K-E-F-I-R. And basically that's fermented dairy. And so this is going to be higher than the in probiotics and traditional yogurt because it's actually fermented. So we didn't just add in probiotics. One thing I really, really like is recommending sauerkraut and kimchi. Have you ever had sauerkraut or kimchi?
I've had it, yeah, like in sandwiches.
Yeah, and so sauerkraut is some. It's one of those things that if you like pickles, and if you like that those sour types of foods, then you'll like, if you like vinegars and like pickled beets and pickled onions and that sort of thing, you'll like sauerkraut. And I really like sauerkraut because literally it's just fermented cabbage. And so what you're going to do, you can easily make it on your own, but you can also just buy it. You just want to make sure that the only ingredients in there are cabbage and salt, because if there's anything else, it's not naturally fermented. For example, if you're looking at, say, let's say pickles. Pickles are a fermented food. However, when you look at most of the pickles in the store and you're looking at the ingredients, you'll see vinegar in there. And so if vinegar is added, then there's nothing fermented because that vinegar taste comes from the fermentation, right? So if it has vinegar, then it's not a fermented food. But that's why I like to look for something like sauerkraut because it's literally cabbage and salt, and then it ferments. And so to get the amount of probiotics you'd need in your day-to-day from something like sauerkraut, you'd only need like 2 tablespoons a day. So that's why I like that. Kimchi is very similar. It's fermented vegetables. Usually it's Korean or Japanese, I'm not sure, but they basically get this paste and they get a spice and they flavor it, and then you basically just eat it. Same thing as sauerkraut. Good with sandwiches. I eat it like alongside a salad, or I might just like throw it on the side of my salad. I eat it plain because I just like it. But I feel like it's a taste that you get used to and you either really like or you really don't. But it's a really good thing because there's no extra sugars, right? It's just the fermented food. And so if you're looking at other things like kombucha, which is very popular, kombucha is also great because it's fermented tea, and they can make it with a variety of different things, a variety of different teas, so you can have different flavors and stuff. But a lot of time it has a lot of sugar. So that's what we have to be careful of with, if you're getting your only source of probiotics from having a kombucha every day, maybe that's too much when you can just have 2 tablespoons of sauerkraut, right?
Well, you said with sauerkraut it takes 2 tablespoons. So is that like an immediate effect, or like what kind of response
Yeah.
your body gonna have to that?
I mean, you could, like, I would take sauerkraut to help with digestion. Like if you have kind of an upset stomach, you could take a scoop of sauerkraut. I use the sauerkraut, like the actual juice. Costco used to sell this really, really good raw organic sauerkraut. It was my favorite. I haven't been able to find it in a while, but any kind of sauerkraut you have, if you drink the brine of it, that can be really good for like colds and flus. If you're sick, you give yourself like a gut shot. The other thing is apple cider vinegar. You know how when you buy apple cider vinegar unpasteurized raw and it has that like the mother at the bottom? It's got like something that floats at the bottom. That's the same thing. So that's like that bacteria as well. And so that's why people use apple cider vinegar for digestion as well.
Interesting.
Other things, it's called, I don't know how to pronounce it. It's called either natto or natto. I've never had it. I've heard it's an acquired taste and it's made with soy. So I'm not going to really say anything about that. I've heard of coconut kefir. So again, if you're dairy free, there is such thing as a fermented coconut milk. I've again never had it, so I don't know. And then other things like miso. So if you get miso soup and it's done properly, that's technically a fermented food. And that's about it with respect to foods. It's all about just different fermented foods. So if you had different fermented vegetables or something like that, if you had olives that were actually like fermented properly and didn't have, again, the addition of vinegars and stuff like that, then that would be actually good.
Awesome.
But when it comes to food, we need to support our probiotics, our good bacteria, but we also need to be able to feed that. So we don't want to forget our prebiotics. And so usually I don't recommend a supplement with prebiotics, because we end up getting them from our food. So basically these, again, they act as food for the probiotics and they help the probiotics grow and remain in your digestive system. So I mentioned a lot of those strains were transitory where they just like move on through, but with the addition of prebiotics, that kind of helps it grow a bit. So there's a few foods that we can use as prebiotics, and I'll just list some of them. Vegetables, including asparagus, bananas, garlic, artichoke, leeks, onion, tomatoes, barley, rye, whole grains, dandelion root, chicory root. So lots of things that we probably get in our day-to-day, in our day-to-day diet if we're eating a well-rounded diet, right?
Awesome. So just to recap there, we have probiotics, but then we have prebiotics. So prebiotics are the food for the probiotics. Okay.
Yeah. And so some people will ask me, they're taking probiotics, but they've heard, oh, I'm taking a probiotic, but is it actually helpful because I don't have a prebiotic supplement? And should I be taking a prebiotic supplement? And so I like to clarify that prebiotics are the food for probiotics. So for probiotics to be sustained, because again, a probiotic is a bacteria. When we're taking a probiotic, we're literally taking that bacteria that's been put into capsule form. They're saying the argument is, well, it's not going to stay there because I don't have prebiotics. My argument is some of the probiotics actually have things used as prebiotics in the actual capsule, so that problem is kind of solved. Other times, it's just about eating a variety of like the foods I had just mentioned to make sure you have the prebiotics
I feel like
available.
that those are pretty common foods. Like you
Yes,
shouldn't feel like you're
exactly.
not keeping them in there because like if you're eating tomato, onions, garlic,
Yeah, whole
bananas,
grains.
like these are pretty common
Yeah.
things. I wouldn't say that's something to be worried about, or at least that I would be completely worried about. Is
No.
there any way that you would overdose on probiotics? Is that a possibility?
Yeah, there is. And there's certain people that probiotics are not good for. So that's why it's so important to be able to have somebody who knows what they're talking about. Because again, at the end of the day, probiotics can make things worse sometimes for people. So I'll just kind of backtrack. In terms of overdosing on probiotics, if you are taking, so there are certain probiotics that I will recommend for my patients who have specific conditions. So for example, someone with Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, I often recommend a probiotic, and now they actually don't sell to Canada, but there is a substitute product that's the exact same. I just don't remember the name. So the one that I usually recommend is called VSL3. And basically it comes in these sachets and it's a powdered probiotic and it's been very, very well researched for inflammatory bowel disease. It works like it's astonishing. Like it's crazy how much it works. It's very expensive. It's like it works out to be like $100 a month. But I find for these patients who are in this inflammatory state, if they can just do that for like 3 months, usually they're in almost remission. So I've seen it, excuse me, I've seen it work really, really, really well. So that's why I recommend it. And with that one, it is an extremely, extremely high dose. And so what I say to people is that first, when they're taking it, it's a shock to the system. So you might actually have diarrhea for the first couple of days or an upset stomach or bloating. Usually that goes away after a few days because they're getting used to that dose. And with somebody who has Crohn's or colitis, they're used to this digestive upset. So usually I don't have many concerns from a patient perspective. Usually they don't even notice because they were already feeling like crap. So if they have an upset stomach for a couple of days, that's kind of the norm. And then things kind of get better, right? So for that population, I do a very, very high dose and I find it works very, very well. And I don't really find the side effects bother them. Now, if you don't have any of those issues and you went to take VSL3, you probably would have an upset stomach for a couple of days. Again, it would probably resolve. The problem is there are specific conditions where I would say probiotics are contraindicated or they make things worse. And so there is something called cytolytic vaginosis. And so in that, it's basically a condition that you would think is a yeast infection. And so you have like the discharge, you have the symptoms of a yeast infection. And usually when you have a yeast infection, you take probiotics because it's an overgrowth of a fungus, right? So you would take the probiotics and you would find things get worse. And so what that is, and it's quite a rare condition, but what happens is basically your good bacteria grow overgrow. So if we take probiotics, that's actually going to make it worse,
Yeah,
right?
fair enough. It makes sense.
So that's one situation where probiotics would make things worse. And so that would be almost like that overdose that you're talking about. And then the second situation where things would be worse with a probiotic is in something called small intestinal bacteria overgrowth. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
So it's also called SIBO. And so what basically the short form discussion about SIBO is that basically you have bacteria that's supposed to be in a certain spot in your digestive system kind of migrates to a different spot, and we end up with the overgrowth of this quote unquote bad bacteria. It's not necessarily bad bacteria, but it's just an overgrowth of what we have. And so if we take a probiotic, that can actually flare things up because it can feed the bacteria to keep proliferating. So in that case, if a probiotic makes it worse, again, this is why it's best to just get investigations done, because then you'll know if a probiotic is going to be right for you. In general, if you start taking probiotics, if you go from zero, like from nothing to probiotics, you could have an upset stomach for a few days. But to be completely honest, if it is a good quality probiotic with no additives, you're not looking at a crappy Shoppers Drug Mart brand that has colors and preservatives and stuff like that, I usually don't find people react poorly. I only see good results unless there's a reason why there shouldn't be. You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
definitely. I remember I bought some probiotics under your recommendation, and they came up here, up to Yellowknife, in a little like cooler pack. And I thought it was like the cutest thing ever. But how do I know, like, even if they're alive? Like, how do I, like, would I feel different, or like, how do I know if they're working?
Yeah, and so that's the thing is with probiotics, a lot of them should be refrigerated. So that's why it came with a nice pack. When we're looking at the different strains of probiotics, let's say for the most part, I know there are certain probiotics that will market themselves as shelf stable. And so that'll be certain strains, but for the most part, any strain you're getting, I would say in general, if we're looking at like Lactobacillus or Bifidobacterium, those are some of the common strains, and those usually have to be refrigerated. And so they're a fragile type of strain. And so what happens is when a company like a professional company, so the one that you got is a professional company. And so what they do is when they tell you how much CFU or colony forming units are in your, like how many billion are in your probiotic, they're guaranteeing that until expiration date. So you can be rest assured that as long as you're keeping it at refrigerated temperature, and or you could even do like room temperature for a day or two, like if you're traveling or something, and it would still be at least that amount. So you know that you're at least getting some. I can't vouch for the other ones that claim to that are cheaper and not studied and that sort of thing. But if they're a professional product and they've been, and that's why probiotics are expensive, right? Lots of research goes into it, lots of formulations to make sure that they're doing what they need to do and to make sure that they're going to be alive at X amount a day, and to guarantee that amount. If you don't see a difference, if you're supposed to be taking probiotics and you take them and you literally see no difference on versus off them, then you either need a different probiotic or you need a higher dose or something else is going on. I find that with a lot of people who I think need a probiotic, they notice results. And I find that it depends what we're treating. Like if it's something like immune system regulation, let's say. That's why we're using probiotics. I find that you don't, it's one of those things that you don't really know till you know kind of thing, because if you're on it for immune support, then you're just not getting sick. And so if you get off of it, you might have to be off of it for like a couple months and then you get sick. You know what I mean? It's really hard. It's hard to gauge those types of things.
Yeah, definitely. So simple answer is they do good ones should be refrigerated at least.
Yes, and there are soil-based probiotics, and so these are resistant strains, but you'd really need to know what ones you're looking for. And so basically some of the soil-based ones start with bacillus. So you might see like a B dot something. So B dot coagulans, B dot subtilis, B dot clausil, like there's different ones. And so those ones are more resistant, and those ones are m more resilient and don't need to be refrigerated. And again, what some companies will do is they'll increase the CFU. So I mentioned that there's a certain billion of CFUs, and basically they'll like 15 billion or 10 billion. And so what some companies will do is they'll actually increase the amount of CFUs to hope that some of those actually make it. So like, I don't know, a crappy brand might say 50 billion CFUs. Really, they'd only need like 10, but they're just hoping that if they put 50 billion, at least 10, at least 10 will make it to the finish line, right?
Yeah, nice.
So
I like the
yeah, right? And something like, and I'm gonna call out a brand specifically because I have a bone to pick with it, but have you ever heard of Align?
line. Yeah, I've heard of them actually, yeah.
Yeah, so they're the ones that you'll find on the shelves at like Shoppers Drug Mart.
Yeah.
And they're on the shelf. So they claim to be shelf stable, I guess.
Yeah.
But if you look at it, if you look at the ingredients, it's a bifidobacterium. So in my opinion, the bifidobacterium should be refrigerated. And the thing is when you look at their ingredients, you actually find a lot of non-medicinal ingredients. And so that's where a lot of preservatives are going to be. And I mean, especially when somebody's taking a probiotic to help with their gut health, I find it really concerning that we're also adding in like preservatives and other things like titanium dioxide, and propylgallate and things that we shouldn't really have in our supplements. Whereas if you look at a good quality one, you'll see the strains. You might see like potato starch, and then you'll see whatever they use to make the capsule, and then that's pretty much it. And so you always, and this goes with any supplement, is
Yeah.
you need to make sure you're reading those non-medicinals because there's a reason why you're paying more for a prenatal supplement that is clean versus a prenatal supplement that has red dye number four in it.
Definitely.
So again, just looking at the ingredients, some companies will actually freeze dry or they deep freeze to protect the probiotic viability. So this will like have to do with their water control. And so there's different ways to process it, freeze drying, increasing CFUs. That's kind of what they'll do. And like I mentioned, anything with lactobacillus or bifidobacterium usually is fragile under normal conditions. So usually it's assumed that if you don't refrigerate, they won't make it. And going back to it, I kind of want to go through some of the strains just to give you an idea. And I'm not going to go into much depth, but I want to give you and the listeners and everyone an idea of the complexity of the different strains so that when people go to the store, they really take note of kind of what they're buying and why. Because again, probiotics are expensive. You can be paying like $50, $60, $70 for a bottle. And so if you're doing that, you need to know why you're doing that. So just the researched some strains. And so if you're interested in these strains, I'll kind of run through these in not too long because I don't want it to get too boring. But if anybody's interested, you might want to grab a pen and paper and take note. But basically, there's some conditions that have been studied and there's strains that have been studied specifically for that. So in something like acute diarrhea, some lactobacillus strains have been shown to be good, bifidobacterium. Specifically, there's one called rhamnosus, and it helps to inhibit E. coli specifically. So that's like a food poisoning type of strain. Looking at something like Saccharomyces boulardii, that is really good with especially antibiotic-associated diarrhea. So if you're on a course of antibiotics, Saccharomyces boulardii can be good. And Saccharomyces boulardii is also a soil-based one, so it is more resilient when we're looking at treating something like allergies. There's only two strains that have really been studied for allergies: Bifidobacterium longum and Lactobacillus paracasei. So when we look at those types of things, if you're trying to prevent allergies and you're taking probiotics for that, then you need to make sure you're finding a product that has those strains. But
Definitely.
again, if we're looking at something like diarrhea, we have like 5 or 10 different strains to choose from. So usually when you get a broad spectrum, you're usually fine. There are specific cases where I will say, okay, you have diarrhea, I'm going to put you on strictly this strain or strictly this product that has this strain, depending on what it is. But not all the time will you be okay with just getting a broad spectrum. Things like when we're looking at, there's research in bone loss, so women's health. Lactobacillus reuteri has actually been studied for women's health. So if you look at a lot of the women's health formulas, that actually might have that strain in it, because it's been studied also to help with bone maintenance.
Oh, so it goes a lot further than digestion, it sounds like.
A lot further. We have research on cholesterol. We have research on helping reduce symptoms of chemotherapy, specific strains for Crohn's and colitis, which, like I said, inflammatory bowel disease. We have research on helping with glucose maintenance, so people who need better sugar regulation, so diabetics, specific ones that help with gut infections, specific ones helpful for hypertension or high blood pressure, immune support. H. pylori eradication. So if you get ulcers from H. pylori, specific ones you mentioned, we were talking about infants. So infant diarrhea, there's a specific strain named Bifidobacterium infantis, and this is actually one of the first to colonize a newborn's digestive tract. So that's going to be important to find if you're looking for one specifically for your infant. Again, there's ones that specifically help with mood. So if I'm giving probiotics to help with depression, I'm going to look for maybe one with Bifidobacterium longum, Lactobacillus helveticus, because those are the ones that are studied. And
I
then
had no
traveler's
idea.
diarrhea.
That's crazy. I had no idea that could help with mood and things like that.
Mood is studied. There's a lot of new research coming out with gut health because, I mean, as you know, some of your neurotransmitters are made in your gut, serotonin specifically. And so there is a very big movement to do more research in between that gut-brain connection. And actually, I was reading a research article yesterday about how the gut infections early in life can actually predict future mental health issues. So that's really interesting research. Again, we're at the tip of the iceberg. There's especially specific strains with like UTIs. So women who suffer from UTIs frequently, they want to look for specific strains. There's ones that specifically help with yeast infections in the vaginal microbiome. And then there's other ones that can help with like Lactobacillus rhamnosus has actually been shown specifically to help with things like Salmonella, E. coli, so to help with those foodborne illnesses. And there's ones that have specifically been shown to help with viral. So again, that was just kind of a really quick run through, but I'm choosing a probiotic for a concern looking at the strains. And so usually, depending on what I'm treating, I can get away with some of those good quality professional brand broad spectrums because they will have a lot of the research strains. But a lot of the not so good quality ones won't. But let's say there's only two strains that are going to help a specific concern. I'm going to make sure that my product has that, right?
And so that's why it's important to seek out, people like yourself to actually determine what kind of probiotics you need, right?
Yeah,
So
exactly.
this isn't always do it yourself or
No, not always.
awesome. So you kind of mentioned what some of the side effects were. So, what is the best time that you would recommend taking probiotics?
Yeah, this is really interesting because really in the small intestine, there's a lot of controversy with when you should take it and like on an empty stomach or not. In the small intestine, the most serious obstacle to the probiotic survival is bile salts. So looking at that, we're kind of looking at when we eat versus when we can take them. And so what I would usually say is taking them on an empty stomach is the best way to go. Because bile salts are lowest during fasting. So empty stomach is going to be the best idea. However, I always say to my patients who have sensitive stomachs, some people just don't do well taking any supplement on no food or on an empty stomach. So I'd rather you take it than not. So if you can, empty stomach. But I always say with or without food, just because it really depends on the circumstance.
Yeah. I remember when I was taking it more actively, it tells you to take it like throughout the day. Is that true? Like, are you taking them before every meal, or like I thought it was kind of a high amount that I was taking.
Think it depends. When if I'm treating something like, say you were on antibiotics for, I don't know, you were on an antibiotic course for the past 3 weeks. I might start you off with like two or three capsules a day and spread them out throughout the day. Do that for like a week or two and then go down to one, just to kind of get your bacteria levels back up, because I wouldn't like, you kind of want to hit it hard at first. If the person has issues that have been long standing, I might start with higher dosing. I mean, it depends on the circumstance, but I might start with higher dosing if the circumstances are right. And then otherwise I would just say one a day. And it depends on what it is too. Like some brands I recommend are like an intensive and you only need one a day. Some if like, say I have them on kind of my favorite broad spectrum and we're just kind of ramping it up because they're on antibiotics, I might up it to two or three a
Okay,
day.
that's manageable. I thought for some reason I was taking like
Yeah.
six, and I was like, I can't keep up with
No.
this. This is overwhelming.
No, you shouldn't be.
Okay.
You should not be.
Was probably a user error.
And that's usually
Yeah,
what
probably. I'm not gonna point any fingers though.
it
But as you mentioned, antibiotics, when I'm on them, I need probiotics. Can you explain
Yes.
this?
Yeah. So antibiotics kill the good and bad bacteria, which is good when we have an infection. But what it's going to do is it's going to leave an environment prone to overgrowth of that bad bacteria. Our body's going to favor growing things like staph and negative bacteria, and that's going to make us sick. And so what I found interesting in so this stat is from 2014, but it has been growing. The total prescriptions of antibiotics in Canada in 2014, 23 million, and about 50% of these were given for 50% of these that were given for respiratory infections were unnecessary, meaning that they were viral respiratory infections, and people were either pressing for antibiotics or doctors didn't really know better and they were giving them. And 30% in general are unnecessary. So of that 23 million number that's climbing, 50% was given and it was unnecessary for specifically respiratory infections, and 30% overall were unnecessary. And so the problem is with that is antibiotic resistance is increasing at an alarming rate. And it's actually really scary and people need to take a lot more note. I think it comes down to a lot of it comes down to the healthcare system, the gaps we have in I guess continuity of care. So my first thing is I think what happens is people get sick or their kids get sick and they don't really know how to manage it. And so they'll go to a walk-in clinic. They'll see a doctor who's never seen them before. The doctor will do an exam and will say, you know what? I'm going to prescribe the antibiotics because they're covering their butt. They're saying in case this turns into something else, because they don't know your health history. They don't know if you're prone to getting, even if you have a viral infection, maybe you'll get a bacterial on top of that. And then you'll need the antibiotics. So they give it just in case. And a lot of those times that just in case never happens, but that doctor doesn't really know your health history. So how are they supposed to know whether or not that just in case might happen, the likelihood of that,
Definitely.
right? So I think that that's the number one problem is that's one example of some of the gaps in our healthcare. The other one is a lack of education to the public. And I think a lot of the public, because we don't know, we get scared. And we think that when we have a fever or our kid has a fever or something else, it's a really scary thing. And it can be scary to see, especially a little kid with a fever. And so it's good to understand when we need to be looking for antibiotics and when we don't, and when we really need to trust the physician. I know I've spoken to mothers in the past who will go to the doctor and they'll be like, finally went to the third doctor and they finally gave me antibiotics. And it's like, well, the first two probably didn't for a reason. So there is a matter of trusting in the fact that a doctor will know if it's a viral or a bacterial. And for those of you who don't know, antibiotics are antibacterial, basically. And so if you have a viral infection, which viral infections are far more common than bacterial, If you have a viral infection, unfortunately, nothing you take is going to help. You can take, certainly, you can take natural things that are going to be antiviral, help boost your immune system, rest, water, like, the normal things. But antibiotics specifically kill bacteria. They kill bad and good bacteria. And so if you have a viral infection, antibiotics are not going to help. And so I think that's a problem, is there's that lack of education. And you know that for being in nursing, right? So it's just people don't really know,
Yeah,
right?
fair. It's a fair thing. I totally agree. And if I wasn't in nursing, I might not know myself, you know? So.
Exactly. So I like to direct people to, for anyone who's wondering, the CDC or the Centers for Disease Control has a really good like PDF of when antibiotics are necessary. And so you can just Google it, CDC, I think it's like antibiotic necessary, something like that. You'll find it. It's a PDF, and basically it goes through, like, it's a chart, and it says sore throat, and it tells you like antibiotics, yes or no. And it gives you kind of stipulations. So it says like strep throat, antibiotics, yes. And so if you looked up the symptoms of strep throat and you knew that you likely had strep throat, then okay, you need antibiotics. The flu, do you need about antibiotics? No, the flu is a viral infection. And so just kind of going through that really helps people. So that's kind of a tangent, but that's why antibiotic resistance is climbing, because what happens is we continue to take these antibiotics that are unnecessary, and the bacteria gets smarter. Bacteria is really, really smart. And so they see the antibiotics we give them, and they say, okay, what can we do to try to mount up a bigger response so that we're not being killed? And then the worst part is people will get a 10-day course of antibiotics, and they'll only do 7 days because they feel better. And so what happens is the dose you've been given of antibiotics is the dose required to kill the bacteria that you have. And so if you do not finish that course, what you're doing is you're giving the bacteria just enough, but you're not killing it completely. So you're actually allowing it to mount a bigger response. And then you're not finishing the course, and then the bacteria get bigger, and then you poop it out in your feces, and then it goes into the landfills, and then it goes, like, these bacteria are going everywhere. They're called superbugs, right? And so when we actually take probiotics with antibiotics at the same time, now a lot of people say it's been kind of controversial. Well, why would I take probiotics while I'm taking antibiotics? Because it's just going to kill it. And actually, research has shown, and they basically had, I was at a conference, and they showed kind of a graph of taking antibiotics. They showed your bacteria levels, like all bacteria levels, good and bad, kind of just plummeted. And then they showed this recovery phase of, like, after you took your antibiotics, your bacteria was still really, really low, right? Because you killed it all off. And then you take probiotics, you have to build it back up. And so they actually found when you took antibiotics at the same time as your probiotics, not at the same time, like time-wise during the day, but say your antibiotics are morning and night, take your probiotics at lunch, right? You want to take them a little bit, like at least a few hours gap. And so they found that when you actually took that, it reduced the antibiotic resistance and it improved the recovery. So what would happen is as you're killing off the bad bacteria, you're supplementing with good. So that bacteria line isn't plummeting all the way down and then having to come back up and having to recover. It's kind of staying as a flat line so that you're not killing off things that don't need to be killed.
Yeah, and that makes sense to me, honestly, because even if it is killing, like you said, the numbers game, right? Like you're kind of putting more bacteria in there. And
Exactly.
yeah, maybe it's killing 50%, but that's still better off.
But at least you have
Yeah,
some.
exactly. Like you're at least keeping them a little bit in there, right? So that totally makes sense to me. Interesting. So in your opinion, are any, I mean, I guess we've already kind of answered this, but probiotics, are they a hoax? Obviously not from what you've been saying, but how do you feel about that? Like a lot of articles right now are coming out and just kind of throwing out there that these antibiotics are, or sorry, probiotics are a hoax and that they're money grab. There's an article in the CBC recently that actually suggested that. So what are your feelings?
Yeah, and I'm opening up this article right now. I looked at it before, but it's been a little bit. That says probiotics probably aren't making you well, and they could be making you sicker. And this is CBC. CBC loves to make marketplace articles that are against anything that's natural, but that's fine. Yeah, and so it is true. Like I mentioned, there's certain strains that are what's called transitory, and that's the reason why you need to take probiotics daily, is because a lot of strains, and they're still trying to figure this out in the research, is a lot of strains are transitory. And so they go in, they do their thing, and then you poop them out, or they're not there anymore. And that's the truth in a lot of it. I wouldn't say that they're making you sicker, because they solve a lot of problems. And I actually don't really know. I think this is still a really new area of research. And so, like I mentioned, something like VSL3 that I give to my patients with Crohn's and colitis, I've seen my patients take it for 3 months, and then they don't take it anymore and they're fine. And maybe they go through a stressful situation in 6 months and they order a few more packs, and then they go through it again and then they're
That's
better.
great.
And then they don't have a flare. So the answer is I don't really know with some strains. And I think a lot of the problem is a lot of people don't really know. So I think that there's certain ones. I always say stick with a professional product, because then at least you know that you're getting what they say you're getting. So I think it also has to do with the strain. So like I mentioned, some people can be getting sicker. And it's not the probiotics, like general umbrella term. It's the fact that you have a condition that probiotics are making worse, or you have a condition and you're not taking the right strains, or you have a sensitivity and you're taking a Jameson brand that has who knows what in it. So and it takes research to know what strain. So a lot of these companies are, unfortunately, you can't patent natural things, and that's why the natural supplement market is. It's a difficult kind of terrain, because as soon as somebody studies melatonin, well, now everybody can take that research and make their own melatonin, right? You can't patent something. So I think it makes it difficult, and I think a lot of these cheaper brands are taking their products and they're just kind of throwing out there whatever everyone else says. And so their probiotics might not help you, and they might actually have other stuff in them. I'm just looking now. Like some of these cheaper brands just have random strains in them, like ones I've also never heard of. And that's not to say they don't have anything on them, but I'll be willing to bet that there is not a lot on these ones if they're not in the professional brands. So I don't know. I think that goes with any kind of supplement. You don't want to get a crappy brand. And again, I think that's why we take probiotics daily. And I think that it can get expensive. And there are certain ones that I'll recommend for kind of like a broad spectrum after we've like stabilized whatever condition we're trying to treat. And then we've gotten to a point where we're just doing maintenance. I will recommend a less expensive professional brand one, because we're not targeting so much anymore. But also, again, it can go back to food sources. I was at a conference recently, and one of the speakers said something so interesting. He said, "I tell my patients," because I was mentioning, if you don't have a variety, if you have a healthy diet, that's one thing. But if you don't have variety in your diet, you're going to have the same bacteria. And so that's what happens. We get into ruts of eating salads with tomato and cucumber. And then what, right? Like, your bacteria is only going to be what you make it with that tomato and cucumber. And so he said he recommends to his patients to go to the grocery store, and once a week, you buy something that you've never bought before in terms of vegetables and fruit.
Interesting. That's awesome. I
So
like that idea.
if you, yeah. And so actually, my husband and I have actually been doing it, and we'll go and we'll get like a random fruit or a random vegetable. And like, you just buy one, and then you just, I don't know, Google how to cook it. You can also, like, if you never eat like turnips, like get a turnip and like cut it up and put it in with your sweet potato and your regular potato and just roast it. And if you don't really like turnip, well, you can hide it in all your other potato, right? Like, you just kind of put it in there. Recently I bought papaya, and I like literally had never bought a
No, me
papaya,
neither.
because I don't know, you just don't think
No.
of it, right? And so we saw papaya and we're like, let's just get a papaya, and we got papaya, and it's actually really good. And papaya is really, really great for
Yeah.
digestion, and a lot of digestive enzymes have what's called papain in them, and it's from papaya. And you can actually, I started reading up on papaya, because like, I don't know everything about every food, like why would I? And so you can actually take the seeds out of the papaya and you can roast them, and they're almost like pepper. And so you take them, you roast them, you dry them out, and then you like put them in like a pepper grinder, and you can use them as like seasoning on like meat and
Oh,
stuff. So or veggies or whatever. Like, it's actually, I wasn't expecting that, but It's like they've got kind of like that peppery taste if you eat them
Yeah.
raw. So it's just interesting to just change your diet, change it up, do one thing different, get a different berry, buy a different. This week we bought golden berries. I'd never had them before. Just like you just kind of do that, and that helps build your microbiome. And in my opinion, that's the most sustainable way to take your probiotics. And I think if we're doing something therapeutically, we use a therapeutic, so we use a supplement. But if we're trying to do something to promote like a longevity and to pr a cr like promote a sustainable environment, I think you need to be changing your diet and adding something new every single week, because that's the way to really change the bacteria that are naturally going to grow in your gut.
Definitely. I think that's a really important point, is that we don't actually need to be taking supplements, not all the time at least. Like you said, a lot of this can be coming through our own diets, and it's important to note that like that shouldn't be a reason you're not trying new foods, you know. As you said, probiotics are expensive, and if we can't afford them, we can still accommodate for that by trying different foods and keeping a healthy diet and a healthy lifestyle. So I think that's really important to note as well. This whole time I'm sitting here thinking, you know, oh, I wonder what kind I should buy and what I should be taking. But realistically, I could be just doing it through diet. I have no reason I need to maybe need to supplement it, right? So.
Exactly. And if I see someone, like, again, I have a patient, let's say, come in who's been on 4 rounds of antibiotics in the last year. Yeah, I'm going to put you on a probiotic therapeutic
For
supplement
sure.
with specific strains. If you have UTIs, I'm going to put you on it. If you have severe digestive issues, I'm going to put you on it. But if you're generally healthy and you're just being healthy, you cannot supplement a poor diet. You can't. So at the end of the day, you need to be not only eating a healthy diet, you need to vary your diet. The amount of people I see come in to see me and they're like, yeah, I eat healthy. They eat the same thing every single day. And it's like, that's okay, but like it's also not. You know what I mean? You do need to change it up, and you need to keep your body guessing, or else your bacteria is going to reflect that,
Yep,
right?
we are what we eat.
Exactly. So yeah, that's it with probiotics. Do you have anything else that you wanted to ask, or that we didn't kind of touch
No,
on?
I think that's great. Thank you so much, Laura, for covering all my questions as per usual, and noting that we can get it through food and that we should be definitely talking to professionals such as yourself about what we actually need to make ourselves healthier.
Absolutely. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Well Women Podcast. I am
I'm
Laura.
Sam.
All right,
Bye.
bye.